Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
But it seems we are both here, so shall we begin?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
I was just going to say, unless Charlton's actually, you know.
It's Juan Carlos. Hey, I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
No matter who is engineering and pushing the buttons down in downtown Los Angeles. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thank you for joining us for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We will get smarter together via the questions all y'all send us by whatever method you do so.
And if you've got a question about the economy or business or tech, email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can leave us a voicemail. Our number is 508-UB-SMART.
All right. Up first today, we're going to go to the recent Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade. The case is called, known as Dobbs. Here's the question.
Hi, this is Jeff from Chicago. I have a question about the employers who are saying that they will pay for abortion coverage or the travel for abortion coverage. Mm-hmm. How exactly do they plan to do that? Hoping you can make me smart. Thanks.
Yeah, I think companies are hoping that other people can help make them smart on that, too, because, mm-hmm. frankly, they are still sorting it out. Megan McCarty Carino did a story on this last week. And the big concern here is basically about employee privacy. So, you know, it's not like you want to tell your boss that you want to get an abortion and therefore need access to these funds. And your boss, for various liability reasons, probably doesn't want to know. And so Megan talked to a bunch of HR experts who said workers shouldn't have to ask their managers or provide personal information to use the benefits. So one way that companies are doing this is to offer the benefits through health insurance companies. So, for example, if I'm doing some irresponsible stunt and break my leg, I can go to the hospital and get it fixed with my health insurance and probably still pay a lot of money. But when I show up with a cast the next day, nobody's going to know what I was doing because it's not like the doctor's going to tell on me. So by the same metric, you know, companies could, you know, cover out of state travel for healthcare, and you'd file for reimbursement, and then that insurance company would demonstrate that it's actually healthcare. Others are planning to offer like a medical stipend through a third-party provider, and these are some of the same providers that cover services like fertility treatments and gender-affirming care. However, creating the benefit is one thing, but really making sure that workers feel comfortable using it is a different story. Because, I mean, if you imagine that you're in a state where you might go to jail for this, it's really how much do you trust your employer and your insurance company? And so experts say that companies have to foster a culture, starting with management, that makes it clear that taking time off without a reason is okay. That's sort of the first step.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think there's so much we don't know that it's gonna play out differently in every state, first of all, and also in ways that I don't think anybody's really thought through yet, which I said a couple of days ago. I don't think so.
Yeah, one thing that keeps coming up for me is just like there's so much that literally didn't exist pre-Roe in terms of how we manage the healthcare people. And all of that has to be sorted through now. And so, yep, it's it yep. is interesting.
Totally.
All right. Totally. Next question is about cryptocurrency, our favorite topic.
Hi, this is Jen, the librarian, calling from Pennsylvania. I was wondering if you could make me smart about the country that had linked its currency to Bitcoin. Since Bitcoin has fallen so much, I was wondering how that country was doing. I hadn't heard much about it since. Thanks. Bye.
That's a really good question. So the reason you haven't heard much about it is because it's not going very well for the country of El Salvador. So last September, the president of El Salvador, Nayib Bukele, announced that Bitcoin was going to be legal tender in that country, which is, number one, a leap, and number two, financially and economically risky and gutsy. They invested a boatload of money, billions of dollars, into Bitcoin. Bought it, have been buying it since, and now are down from the beginning of the year 60%, 60% on their holdings, right? There are very, very few people in that country using crypto as a means of transaction. Very few people have downloaded the app that lets you do that in El Salvador. Look, crypto's going to be the monetary future, but it's not yet. So that's how El Salvador is doing. Really, really not great. Really not great.
What was interesting in one of these stories, I think it was the New York Times story about this, was that, you know, this app that people could use in El Salvador to make transactions in Bitcoin, if you downloaded it, you basically got a chunk of cash-ish Bitcoin money in the app as like an incentive to use it to sort of get it spurred on. And basically, once people used up that initial chunk of cash, they just stopped. And this is like the end. Done.
Yep. Totally. Tell you what, though, here's one last little tidbit, and thanks to Marissa for putting this in the prep. President Bukele is still really popular down there. Polls show more than 8 in 10 Salvadorans continue to support him. So Bitcoin be damned, I guess.
I guess.
Anyway. Peter in Wisconsin, go.
Every summer I notice that half the items at the grocery store have cross-promotions with the big blockbuster movies or shows. Can you make me smart on how these cross-promotions actually work? Do the studios reach out to the manufacturers to get their movies on the labels? Or is it the other way around, that the food manufacturers want to be associated with the biggest movie of the summer, so they pay to have it on their labels? Which side is making the money on these deals?
Have you seen one too many Minions-themed item in the store there, Peter? Perhaps. Right. Minions are everywhere. Of course, these are the little yellow characters based on the, what is it, Pixar that does Despicable Me, that series? It's
Illumination Studios.
Illumination Studios, point, okay. Yes. So the Minions being the spinoff from Despicable Me, little yellow creatures that, you know, are followers of villains, and they have their own movie out this summer. And the product placements are everywhere. And packaged salads, chickpea puffs, muffins, banana-scented body wash, because they like to say banana. I know way too much about the Minions. Wow. Okay, so for this question, we reached out to Stacey Jones at Hollywood Branded, which is an agency that connects brands with studios. And so she says it works both ways in response to the question. Sometimes brands will reach out to the studios, and sometimes the studios will reach out to manufacturers to get the firm's intellectual property incorporated into like packaging, displays, or commercial spots. And, you know, there's also product placement within movies and stuff like that. Typically, these kinds of partnerships will happen within an 8 to 12 week window of a film's release, because you have to imagine it needs to sit on the shelves for a while and then work through the inventory. In terms of who's making money, often money isn't actually exchanging hands between the manufacturer and the studio for these kinds of partnership. It's more like the filmmaker is temporarily loaning intellectual property to the brand, which is considered a win-win, because for the studio, it can offset the cost of marketing the movie, because now we're talking about Minions on Make Me Smile, because everyone's staring at Minions in the store.
Totally.
And And then, you know, that could be just as expensive. You know, the branding and marketing a movie can be almost as expensive as making a movie sometimes. And then, you know, the cross-promotional branding works as mini advertisements also for the product. You know, if your kid really loves Minions, you may end up getting a Minion-themed product regardless of whether you want it or not. But these partnerships are different from the licensing deals that happen outside that 8-week window of a movie's release. And there may be a whole new product line that's developed and you know, marketed year round. You know, I'm thinking, you know, because I may have recently purchased some of these, you know, like the SpongeBob SquarePants fruit snacks, you know, like yeah. that's a little different. And those licensing fees can cost manufacturers about like 10% of whatever it makes off the product. And then of course you have merchandising and like hats and blankets and sweaters and all kinds of things. $292 billion global sales revenue of licensed merchandise in 2019. It's, Lots of stuff.
Everybody makes money. Everybody makes money on those deals. That's why they did them. And they've been doing them since, you know, forever. For bleeping ever. Tell you what, let's go to beer for this next one, huh? Beer for the last
one?
Yeah.
All let's right. do it.
Let's go to beer. Okay.
Hi, this is Ward from Bethesda, Maryland. I am calling Kai, I guess, about the news that Sapporo USA is going to acquire Stone Brewing. I want to hear what you think about that, Kai. Let us know.
I was kind of shocked, actually. So this is news. So anybody who's watched the Friday thing or listened to me, frankly, on the air and heard me talk about beer knows that long, long ago, I discovered Stone Brewing. And they are sort of the OG West Coast IPA brewing company. Started like 25-ish, 28-ish years ago out here on the West Coast. I had Greg Koch on. He's a listener of Marketplace and of this podcast, in point of fact. About 10 years ago or so, we had him on Marketplace. I was kind of surprised at this because their business is doing pretty well. It was sort of shocking, but I have two thoughts. Number one is good for them, right? Greg's been doing this for 25, 30 years. And he finally got his exit, right? It's like $145-ish million deal. There's some debt involved as well. And Greg said, look, I've been doing beer for 25, 30 years. He said this in a farewell post. And it's time for me to do something else. It's time for somebody else to run Stone. It's time for us to figure out a way to leverage the Stone brand with a bigger company. Stone is the ninth biggest brewing company in the United States, but it's still relatively small. Still relatively small. So they're getting some global reach with Sapporo. I want them to keep their beers the same. I want to keep the attitude the same. I'm not actually, by the way, getting paid by Stone for this. I just think they make good beer. But here's the other thing that happened. So I've talked before on this podcast, I think, about Golden Road Brewing, which is a microbrewery that started here in Los Angeles. We did a brewery tour with them probably 5-8 years ago. And it was great. It was really fun. It was started by a woman and a guy here in LA. They started, it's a passion, they built it. And then they sold out to, I think it was Anheuser-Busch InBev. And I was a little bummed at the time because I was like, oh man, that's this conglomerate taking over this cool company. But here's the thing. If you start a tech company in this economy, just for instance, and those founders make, I don't know, $100 million by selling to a bigger company, everybody goes, yay, that's great. They got their exit. Craft beer people go, oh no, man, don't mess up the beer. So yay for the people who worked and built Stone. Just don't mess up the beer. That's what I'm saying. That's what I think about Stone Brewing in Sapporo.
It's so funny that you mentioned, AB InBev, because I remember the horror in St. Louis when people found out that Anheuser-Busch was going to be purchased by a foreign company.
Oh, yeah.
People lost their minds and everyone was like, yep. Don't change the beer and what's going to happen to Busch Stadium and this is going to be terrible. Right. And, you know, people lost it. And
people are very serious about their beer. That's exactly
well, it. And we still have our Clydesdales, which is what really matters.
That's true. That is true.
Yes.
So there you go. That's
that was like the highlight of my childhood. Anytime there was like a festival or a fair, was like they'd bring out the Clydesdales and you'd get to pet them and it was so cool.
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Totally.
Beer. So there we go. Yay. Beer. All right, that's it for us today. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow with more news and more smiles.
In the meanwhile, send us your questions, your comments, your thoughts, whatever you'd like to say. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org, or you can leave us a voicemail, 508-UB-SMART.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Olivia Zah is our intern. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter.
Juan Carlos Dorado was in charge downtown. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer, although she's off this week, I don't know what she's doing, is Bridget Bonner. Hopefully sitting on a beach somewhere. She ran away. That's
ran away and joined the circus.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.